Welcome to the Sex Talk Cafe, a podcast about the transformative and healing power of sex, pleasure, and embodied sexuality. I'm your host, Morgan Susan Taylor. I'm a sex therapist and specialist in women's sexuality and the founder of the Pathway to Pleasure Collective, where I am passionate about normalizing the conversation on sexuality while building a bridge between the sexual and the spiritual. I created the Sex Talk Cafe as a place for you to learn from the experts in the field of somatic sex education, sex therapy, and sacred sexuality so that you can remove the mystery from sex, release guilt and shame, and learn to live a sexually empowered life filled with more confidence, connection, intimacy, and love. Thank you for joining me. Today's topic is about what I'm calling the myth of the mood, or overcoming desire discrepancy in sexual relationships. If you've never heard the term desire discrepancy, let me go ahead and just explain what that is. And it's pretty simple. It's pretty much exactly what it sounds like. When there is a difference or a discrepancy in desire, the sexual desire between two people in a sexual relationship. And desire discrepancy is one of the most common challenges that I see as a sex therapist in my practice when I work with couples. It's one of the biggest issues that gets a couple in the door to seek help with their sexual relationship. And it's really a problem. It's a huge problem because many times what I see is that one partner has made the other partner wrong for either what they decide is low sexual desire or too high of a sex drive. So I really see this going in both directions. And many, many, many times it's the woman who has labeled herself as having low sexual desire or low sex drive, and often makes comments about her male partner having either too high of a sex drive or somehow making him wrong for having a quote-unquote higher sex drive. And meanwhile, she has also often been made to feel wrong for not having high enough sex drive. So what I want to do today is just shed a little bit of light on this topic. Really, one of the most common excuses that I hear, and largely most of the time this is really coming, a lot of times this is coming from women, is this statement, well, I'm just not in the mood, or I have a low sex drive, or I have a low libido, and I'm just not in quote unquote the mood. And really, this is actually one of the biggest myths to women's sexuality. And really, it's because what we don't understand is really how our sexual desire actually works. For a very high majority of women, what recent sex research has found is that arousal actually comes before desire. So when I hear women say, well, I'm just not in the mood, and really what we're saying when we're not in the mood is that we don't have spontaneous sexual desire. So we're going to talk here in a minute about the difference between spontaneous desire versus responsive desire. And so being in quote unquote the mood actually is a byproduct of arousal. So for many women, arousal actually comes first. Before we're going to actually feel that desire for sex, we have to start to focus on our body's readiness and the readiness of our mind, and then also our body really being awakened and ready and fully aroused. From that place, desire for sex naturally arises. So I want to talk about the difference here. So what I'm referring to is called responsive desire. And so responsive desire really emerges in response to erotic stimulation. So for example, how do you like to be touched? What kinds of things in your environment stimulate you and turn you on? For example, that could be soft music, candle lighting, a quiet atmosphere. How do you like to be touched? How do you like to be kissed? What kinds of things throughout your day make you feel turned on? That could be things like words of affection or sexy little text messages from your partner. So really, when we talk about responsive desire, we're talking about desire that occurs in response to stimulus. And for many women, this really is about learning to really identify the things that feel good in your body. What are the things that turn you on and get your body feeling relaxed and get your body feeling open and get your body feeling aroused? And from that place, the desire for sex very often naturally arises. Now, this is very different from what's called spontaneous desire. So spontaneous desire is, when we think of like the desire for sex just happening instantly, right? Like you just think about sex and then you want sex and your body's ready to go. What has been found is that spontaneous desire occurs in about 75% of men, but only about 15% of women. Spontaneous desire is really what we've really set that as the norm of what we expect everybody to have, because 75% of men, that's really how they are aroused and turned on, is spontaneously. Maybe there's a thought about sex. Maybe there's a beautiful woman walking down the street, and that image sort of ignites that desire for sexual activity. And so this is the kind of desire as well that we're shown in movies, in media. And the problem with that is that this is not really necessarily what works for everybody. So again, a lot in my work around women's sexuality, a lot of what I do is try to educate women that what we've been shown and what we've been taught and how we're having sex and the pressure that we're putting ourselves for our bodies to perform in a certain way largely is based on what works for men. So when we start to understand that what works for many women, actually it's about 30% of women and only 5% of men that are found to have what we call responsive desire, which is a completely valid form of desire. And instead, what we've done is we've pathologized women for not having the same architecture of desire that men have, so to speak. So neither spontaneous nor responsive desire is necessarily better. But many times, the person with the responsive desire is blamed or blames herself as having a low libido or low sex drive, when this is actually not the case. If we just understood this other way that desire actually functions, then we would really be able to perhaps have a lot more understanding in our sexual relationships and perhaps be able to eliminate this issue of desire discrepancy altogether. But sadly, instead, what's happened is that many of these women are labeled as having some kind of a disorder. So it's currently referred to as female sexual interest and arousal disorder, FSIAD. Formerly, this was called hypoactive sexual desire disorder or inhibited sexual desire disorder or inhibited sexual desire. And these are considered a sexual dysfunction, which is characterized by a lack or absence of sexual fantasies and a lack of desire for sexual activity. And specifically, when a person will not initiate or respond to their partner's desire for sexual activity. And this occurs supposedly in 30% of women. So technically what this is saying is that 30% of women have a sexual dysfunction. And I call that bullshit. Because honestly, there's more likely some very, very good reasons why women are losing interest in sex that have nothing to do with being sexually dysfunctional or broken. And one of them is this thing called responsive desire. And now that we're starting to, I hope, starting to understand this more, at least it's starting, the seeds have been planted. And this idea of understanding responsive desire and starting to actually actively work with it, we can actually probably drop that 30% way, way, way down. Maybe we can even eliminate it completely. Because a lot of times as well, for women, there's more likely some really good reasons that they're not wanting to initiate sex with a partner, or that they're not responding to their partner's desire for sex. And these tend to be things, for many women, things like unresolved issues in the relationship. When we're resentful or when we're angry or we're upset and we haven't resolved that in the relationship, our bodies are not going to want to open sexually to our partners. But this is not a disorder. Things also like chronic stress or chronic worry, overwork, lack of sleep, any kind of chronic stress state is going to increase our cortisol levels in the body. And anytime cortisol is high, our sex hormones are actually lowered. So that natural desire, that part of us that wants to seek connection and seek sexual activity is actually shut down when we're in a high stress state or in a chronic stress state. Chronic stress also leads to that de to depletion in general, and many times because when we are working too much or we're worried about, let's say, financial worries or child rearing, we're not getting enough sleep. Many times we're also not really engaging in adequate self-care. We're not eating as well as we should. If we're not getting enough sleep, obviously our bodies aren't having that opportunity to fully restore. And all of this causes us to feel depleted, like we have no more left to give. And I don't know very many women when they're in that state that really feel like initiating or responding to their partner's sexual desire. Another really common issue as well of why women might lose interest in sex and not want to initiate and not want to respond to her partner have to do with the fact that sex often is not fulfilling for her, because often it's over way too quickly due to male ejaculation. So sex that lasts maybe 5 minutes, even maybe 10 or 15 minutes, for many women, it's just not enough time for our bodies to actually become aroused. So it really brings this full circle back to this idea that our bodies have to be aroused. Our genital tissues have to be ready and engorged and ready for sex. We have to be relaxed. We have to get out of our heads and into the body. And sex that, lasts maybe 5, 10, 15 minutes, start to finish. And I'm including, like, that includes the foreplay time. And this is not an uncommon thing. It's really not enough time for most women to actually really drop into a state where there's enough relaxation, where they're starting to feel more feelings in the body, where the tissues become engorged, where there's enough time to get us out of that grocery list that we're doing in our heads all the time and really get us into our bodies. It's just not enough time. So what happens is over time, sex that this is really like the standard conventional way that most people have sex. 5, 10, maybe 15 minutes is considered a long time. And what that does over time to a woman's bodies, our bodies are going to shut down to that, right? There's just not enough in that for us. So what has the medical community done to solve this problem of this low sexual desire disorder in women that I'm telling you is not really a disorder, probably for 99.9% of the women who feel like they have low desire or no desire, I'm telling you, it's not a dysfunction. However, the medical community's answer to this problem is, you guessed it, pills. The claim being that low sexual desire is a brain chemical imbalance, just like everything else that we have a problem with in our society. It's a brain chemical imbalance. And so they have created a little pill that supposedly increases some of your brain chemicals, your neurotransmitters that are supposed to make you want sex. And what I'll tell you is that the studies that have been done, the research that's been done on this pill, actually have shown that guess what? It doesn't freaking work. Why would that be? And I'll tell you why that is. It's because our bodies are wise and intelligent. And like I said before, there may be a very, very good reason why a woman is losing interest in sex, or perhaps avoiding sex, or even maybe not having sexual fantasies, quote unquote. So I want to speak to that real quickly. Another thing that I've seen a lot in my sex therapy practice is so many women come to me saying, "Well, I don't have any sexual fantasies." And really what I have discovered is that most of the time that's not true. More often than not, as women, our sexual fantasies tend to be much more subtle and more diffuse than the types of fantasies that most men have. And again, what we end up doing is we're comparing ourselves to men rather than really looking at what's unique to women. And what's unique to women is that many times our sexual fantasies, like I said, they're much more subtle. These might be things of, a little bit more romantic or Imaginings of just being gently touched or caressed or held, little thoughts like that, rather than necessarily these really colorful, overt, wild, what we can consider wild fantasy that tends to be more typical of men. So often it's really not true that you're not having sexual fantasies. More likely, your sexual fantasies are more subtle and more diffuse and not so clearly defined, and perhaps not as what we might call colorful or active or over the top. But it doesn't mean that they're invalid because of that. Now, another reason that I found that sometimes women don't have sexual fantasies or claim that they don't is because they have a lot of cultural conditioning and religious conditioning that they're carrying. There's been over time, a complete shutdown of that capacity to fantasize due to sexual shame that's been instilled on them from their religious upbringing and their cultural upbringing. And as a result, over years and years and years of shutting that part of them off because it was bad or shameful or impure, or so they were told, they've lost access to that part of themselves. But it doesn't mean that that part cannot be excavated and revived and regained. It's just going to take some of the deconditioning of the cultural programming and a deconditioning of some of these limiting beliefs and the shameful feelings and beliefs that this woman is carrying around sex. It is not a sexual disorder, however, and this is one of the reasons that this little pink pill doesn't freaking work. So there's really a better and a completely holistic way to solve this problem of quote unquote low sexual desire in women. And the way to do that is, first of all, to understand your desire type. Are you more spontaneous desire? Meaning you can think about sex and then you sort of just instantly start to want and desire sex. Or are you wired more of the responsive type, where it really has more to do with context and more with being in your body and letting your body become aroused first before that desire for sex is going to naturally arise? Which type are you? And if you are the responsive type, then really it's up to you to start to identify the things that get you turned on. So what are those things? Really identify them for yourself. And a big, big, big part of this for women is really about learning your own body. Learn how your sexual anatomy works. Learn how to be deeply in contact with your emotions. So this is a topic for another time, but many times, as if you are denying your feelings and your emotions and telling yourself not to feel or that you shouldn't feel a certain emotion, what you're actually doing is creating more stress in your body. So for women to really be able to open sexually, we have to learn how to embrace our feelings and really how to be in direct contact with those feelings, feeling them fully, and letting that energy actually move out and through our bodies. That's actually a direct route into orgasmic states for women. And again, that will be a topic for another podcast episode, but it's also a really big part of our turn on. So really being able to be in your body, knowing how you like to be touched. How do you like to touch yourself? How do you like your partner to touch you? What turns you on? What gets you aroused? And maybe it's reading a piece of erotica. Maybe you do enjoy watching porn. Maybe these things are all part of your erotic landscape that help get you in that state of arousal where you're naturally, for many women, naturally that's going to lead to the desire for sex. Now, I just want to address a couple things around this real quickly. Another thing that I hear a lot from a lot of women is, well, I don't want my partner to touch me because then it's just going to lead to sex. And I have two things to say about that that I think are really important. And the first one is, if you knew how you like to be touched in a way that got you just aroused, and you naturally, from that arousal, desire for sex naturally came about, this would be a non-issue because you would be wanting sex. But I know that what happens a lot of times for a lot of women is that their partner makes an advance, or their partner begins just to gently, lovingly touch her, and she sort of ends up kind of giving in to sex when her body's not really aroused. And so sex is kind of like we've sort of sacrificed ourselves to please our partners. And that is exactly what leads to this, like, I don't want him to touch me at all because it's just going to lead to sex. It's because you've engaged in sex before your body is fully aroused and before you're a fully yes. So that problem can really actually be solved when you learn how to give yourself and give your body the amount of time that it actually needs to become fully aroused before sex even happens. And I'll tell you right now, ladies, that for most women, that it takes a lot more than 5 or 10 minutes. For a lot of women, it really does. That's going to vary woman to woman. It's going to vary day to day per woman. So really, the art is about learning to know your body and learning to know if you need a little more time to get warmed up or what it really means to know that your body is a full yes. And here's a little hint. It's about a lot more than just being a little bit wet. And it's about a lot more than just kind of being turned on in your mind and having the thought that, yes, sex would be great. It's really about learning how to feel what it feels like when your body is completely open and completely ready emotionally, energetically, and physically. And that might require negotiating with your partner to spend a little more time, to give you a little bit more time. And on your part, that requires giving up this feeling of guilt about that, or giving up this idea that if you don't hurry up, your partner's going to lose interest. It has to be a working together, because when you are fully aroused and you desire sex, I promise you, your partner gets a lot more out of it. I've really never met someone that said that they really just love it when their partner just has sex with them in order to get it over with, right? Nobody enjoys that. So I promise you that your partner will likely be much more interested in investing in you and in the time that you need to really become fully aroused, because he or she will get a lot more out of it as well. If that's the case, you both will. And when sex is satisfying in that way, then naturally, most of the time, we're actually going to desire it more frequently. So there's another piece as well to this that I think is important to share, and that has to do with touch. As women are extremely finely attuned to a man's intention. So many times a man will touch his woman with sort of this intention of getting something from her, right? A woman is going to feel that every single time. And any time that there's that agenda in the touch, right? A woman unconsciously or consciously is going to feel that agenda in that feeling that he's trying to take or get something from her. And what will happen, our bodies, a woman's body, will actually withdraw and start to shut down from that type of touch. So this is really a little bit of an art form of learning how to touch your partner without an agenda and without an intention. Really just unconditional touch for the sake of either giving or receiving pleasure. And that will make a huge, huge difference as well. And I know that that's another reason why a lot of women eventually just shy away from being touched at all by their partners, because they can feel that. If you're coming at your partner sort of with this idea of I'm going to touch you in order to get something from you or to get sex, a woman is going to consciously or unconsciously withdraw and shut down and pull away from that. So a woman has to feel like it's completely safe to relax, like there's absolutely no agenda, and in that way she can drop into her own pleasure and fully receive that touch. So it's a little bit of a nuanced thing. I know it's kind of like fine-tuning, but I just wanted to bring that out there, and I think it's really important. And then on the topic of touch, there's so much more that we could go into on that we don't have time for today, but I think that those two things, if you start to really pay attention to those two things, it will make a huge difference. So really, all of this begins with ourselves, you first. And one of the most direct ways to start to learn about your own body and what turns you on is through what's called a self-pleasure practice, or what I like to call the pleasure date. It's also referred to as a mindful erotic practice. And that is going to be a topic for next week's podcast, where I'll walk you step by step through how to do that and why. I think more importantly, why. But I hope that this has been helpful for you today, and I hope that you at least have a little bit more understanding about how desire works, and perhaps that you can identify for yourself, are you more of a responsive desire or a spontaneous desire, or are you in the other category entirely? Perhaps you have a little bit of both happening. So the more that we can know ourselves, how our own bodies work, how our desire is actually operating, the more that we become free. Because let me tell you, women, your body is not wrong. and you are not dysfunctional. The problem that we have in today's world is merely a lack of education and a lack of self-knowledge. So I hope that this has been helpful, and thank you so much for tuning in. And I look forward to being with you in our next episode, where I'll be sharing with you about the pleasure date. Thank you for joining me today for the Sex Talk Cafe. Please be sure to show your support by subscribing to this podcast series and sharing it with your community. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you next time.